Hey, Urban Farm Podcast listeners. If you're as passionate about preserving the bounty of each season as we are, hey, I canned my first peaches at the age of 18, and that was a long time ago, then you're going to love what our friends over at Denali Canning have in store for you. They're on a mission to spread the love and knowledge of food preservation, and they're inviting you to join the journey for free. Right now, Denali Canning is offering free canning lids to anyone who wants to dive deeper into the world of food preservation. Yes, you heard that right, absolutely free. It's the perfect opportunity for both seasoned canners and those curious about starting. Denali is about quality, reliability, and supporting the canning community, ensuring that you get the best results every time you preserve. So why not give it a try? Visit DenaliCanning.com/free to claim your free lids and start your preserving adventures today. That's DenaliCanning.com/free. Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 802nd episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Welcome, welcome, everybody. Greg Peterson coming to you from Urban Farm U. Tonight, I am with Judith Horvath. Judith has journeyed from a white-collar business executive to a hair sheep and dairy goat farmer. When COVID and global events laid bare the fragility of our food supply chain, Judith found a way to leave corporate life to concentrate solely on farming. How cool is that? Mm-hmm. Today, she's helping launch a new generation of small farmers with the goal of establishing a resilient local food supply chain based on regenerative agriculture methods, rotationally grazed grass-fed meats, and nutrient-dense produce. She's on a mission to help people get started farming and be immediately successful. Tonight, we're talking about small farm animals. When adding a new animal to your homestead, especially a new kind of animal, there are things that you can do to help ensure that they have a good, smooth transition to your place. Minimizing stress by doing a few key things can help your new critters be healthy. Welcome to the show today, Judith. How are you?
I'm doing great, Greg. I've been looking forward to this. I'm so excited to be here tonight.
Thanks for joining us. And you and I, I don't even know how we connected a few months ago, or maybe last year, early last year. But man, when we started talking on your podcast, on my podcast, we hit it off nicely. And there's so much here for us.
Oh, yeah, we very much play in the same space. But Yeah, I've got the animal focus and you got the plant focus going. And I got the farm going and you got the urban farm going. So nice coverage between the two of us.
Yeah, and I'm not so urban anymore. I'm
That's true.
15 minutes outside of Asheville, North Carolina on 4 acres, which I'm very excited to develop over the next 10 or 15 years. Mm-hmm. So before we got started, you and I read your bio to you. You said something about the importance of local small food systems. Can you say a little bit about that before we get started?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that question. The main thrust of what I do is working to build a parallel structure of our food supply chain. It's unreasonable to think that our existing structure is going to just turn around and reinvent itself automatically without some sort of tremendous external pressure. It's just not going to happen. I'm a big fan of creating parallel structures and then letting the market duke it out, then giving people food freedom. I believe that people should have the choice to purchase the food of their choice from the source mm-hmm. of their choice. It's mm-hmm. very simple. And in my opinion, a key component of success of these structures is going to be thousands of little farms across the United States supplying this, because a lot of the big land is not only cost prohibitive, but it's taken. And then we're increasing in population density, as we all know. And yeah, sure, there's going to be a couple people who can swoop in and buy off some major tracts of land. But really, a lot of this regenerative farming is best done with a lot of human manual labor. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't lend itself well to large scale at this point. I think that's going to change, but I also see a lot of people seeking to make their homestead or farmstead more profitable and seeking meaning in their lives, especially the youth of today and people outside of in urban areas. You can usually find an acre or two in urban areas just around and right outside the city where you can carve out a really nice living. And there are a multitude of farms out there that are seeing $120,000, $150,000, $170,000 per acre. Wow. In produce sales every year when they're using intensive regenerative processes. But it yeah. means that there's a lot of people doing a lot of work in these small spaces, and but the farmers are making a living wage, and then they're serving that immediate community, because and that's how you can make this living wage, because you don't have to pay for packaging and transport costs and a lot of fertilizers and diesel and expensive equipment and all that other stuff. So you can make a go with it. And that's the important part of the food supply chain of tomorrow, in my opinion. It's a lot of little small farms. It's going to increase the resilience. It brings more people into agriculture. It makes the whole system much more nimble and able to respond to what that mm-hmm. in particular locale wants.
Well, I've said for years that the, with a capital T, solution mm-hmm. to our global food chain food system problems is growing food in your front and backyards, growing food right where we live. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, I grew a lot of food on a third of an acre in Phoenix, Arizona, where I lived for 32 years. And I used to, when I went back to college in 1999, I was farming my front and backyard, and I would go to the farmer's market once a week. So it was a very part-time gig for me. I'd go to the farmer's market once a week. I would get up very early on a Wednesday morning and harvest what I had. And I'd usually walk away with $200 or $300 cash for a very part-time gig. And so there's so many opportunities with growing food in our front and backyards. And we used to have about a dozen chickens in our backyard, and we'd sell organic eggs for $6 a dozen. And we couldn't make enough of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, very common. That's where yeah. I started too. Farming a half yeah. acre in suburbia. Absolutely.
So tonight we're going to be talking about small farm animals. I'm thinking mostly goats and chickens. And one of the first points that you use on your sheet that you sent over is minimizing stress. Let's yes. talk about that. You said this is our number one goal. To achieve this, we need to look at several factors.
Yes.
Talk to yeah. me about those.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors. Animals are very prone to having problems with their health when they're stressed, just like humans. We're all that way. But animals don't have the benefit of being able to talk it out with their friends or gain reassurance or sort of be right. in the moment, right? They're stuck in the moment, and all they know is what they're experiencing. They're driven by instinct, and you need to manage these animals when you're bringing them onto your farm mm-hmm. because stress kills, straight up. It kills. An animal that's very afraid or doesn't like the taste of the new water will just dehydrate and die.
Yeah.
And chickens can just be frightened and escape and they're gone. There's just a lot of things that can happen. So in order to minimize stress, I've got a whole bunch of things. And I wanted to talk about general health, the ages of your animals, the housing, containment, food, water, the adjustment process, and where to find animals that are going to be good for your particular homestead.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's talk general health first.
Okay.
Because that's some low-hanging fruit, pun intended there, Greg, that you want to bring home healthy animals. And whether we're talking chickens or goats, and I'm happy to take questions and talk chickens and goats specifically, but generally, I'll just say the chickens are the gateway animal for most mm-hmm. people when they start yep. getting into, they're very easy. If you can keep a cat alive, you can keep a flock of chickens alive. They're very simple. They're intimidating at first, but they're really very simple. And one of the things that you have to be careful of is when you bring them home when they're little, is they're very delicate. They need to be heated at exactly the right amount. And you need to make sure that they're healthy from the outset. And when you have an animal that's a baby, is newly hatched or newly born or just weaned from its mother, in the case of mammals, then they're going to be very prone to stress, injury, getting cold, things like that. So you want to make sure that your animal is healthy. That means getting them from a good source. So when it comes to chickens, I would recommend that you purchase your chickens from somewhere that you know and you trust. A lot of people will say don't ever buy a chicken from Tractor Supply Company. I've had good luck with Tractor Supply chicks. I can also tell you that if you're looking for guaranteed hens, and no matter how much you pay a Tractor Supply, then it's you might get roosters. Stuff gets mixed up there. You may or may not get what you think you're getting. There is, I would say, probably about a dozen hatcheries across the United States that are very well known for their chickens. Yeah. But the one, and I've tried probably five or six of them. Being in Ohio, I'm lucky because I'm in the middle-ish of the country, so I've been able to try a lot of different hatcheries. But time again, Murray McMurray has been best quality.
Yep.
Highest price, not highest prices, but on the higher side. But outstanding quality.
You get what
you pay for. You do. With McMurray, you certainly do. I have paid a lot of money for birds from other companies and been discouraged. I would just say go with Murray McMurray if you want a sure thing. They have an entire shipping methodology. They have boxes that they had specially designed for them so that they could ship them, and they have written their own algorithms for weather patterns and how many holes they punch out of their box and how many extras they add in order to ensure, and whether you put heat packs in or don't put heat packs in order to ensure the most livability. It's like a Swiss watch there. It's unbelievable. They're so good at it.
Yeah.
They also really stay on top of a lot of trends. They are constantly introducing new breeds, and they're on the forefront of breeds, and they move along with homesteaders and current trends. They're not as like hot and spicy and sexy breeds and stuff as Greenfire Farm, but they follow within a couple of years.
And there's one thing that's really important. You touched on it. They do the sexing for us.
Yes.
And so a few years ago, I got 100 chicks that came from McMurray. And what they say is that they're 99% effective on females.
Okay.
And guess what? In 100 chickens, we got one rooster.
True to their statistics.
So they were right on. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, they are really good. Since they've been in business for so long, I think like almost 100 years, they're out of Iowa. They are really good at their sexing. I have definitely gotten on the wrong end of oopsie when it came to other hatcheries sexing them. Now, there are certain birds that you can decide to purchase that guaranteed you'll get the sex that you want. And those are called auto sexing breeds, and they're going to be more expensive. The one that I have loved ever since I got the first ones, they're called Bielefelders. I will keep them forever. They are born with two different types of patterns. Like the males look one way and the females look the other way, and they breed true. And there's a couple different, but yeah, the cream leg bars do the same thing. There might be one other breed, but anyway, they're beautiful. They're big, they're placid. They're just great. And for many years, you could only get them at Greenfire Farms or a couple private farms. And now McMurray does carry them. They're usually sold out, so you're gonna have to keep trying back, but they're really good. So anyway, get your birds from a great source. If you are getting turkeys, same thing. If you're getting mammals, specifically goats or sheep, I suppose most people here are probably not getting sheep, but goats are a very typical homestead animal because they're great for brush control, large animal companions. They're tremendously entertaining, and they will also give you milk and meat. So they are a homestead favorite. I cannot emphasize enough how much I advise against getting any four-legged animal, any ovine or caprine, so any sheep or goat, at a public auction.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
They can bring home pathogens to your flock or your pasture that you will not be able to get rid of. There are things that they can bring home that will get into your soil and can stay with you forever. Whether it's antibiotic-resistant hoof rot, something as innocuous as that, or something like caseous lymphadenitis, which can be transmitted to humans and it's bad stuff. There's all kinds of things that can happen. So please do not get your goats. Do not rescue a goat. Do not get a baby bottle goat from someone who, you're not doing yourself a favor. I know you're doing the animal a favor, but you're not doing yourself and your future other animals a favor by rescuing an animal like that.
So McMurray Hatchery is easy. Where does one get goats?
Yeah, there isn't a McGoaty Hatchery. So there's going to be, you're going to have to find them through a local goat breeder. And the best way to ferret them out is to ask questions. And you want to ask those goat breeders if they do testing for pathogens and what testing do they do. The three things you want to make sure that they do testing for is called CAE, which is caprine arthritic encephalitis, CL, which is caseous lymphadenitis, Yoni's disease.
By the way, Donna says, wow, this is eye-opening. Thanks, Judith.
All right. Very good. I hope this saves you heartache. Yeah, all of this stuff is contagious from animal to animal, and all of this stuff also can be transmitted from goats. A lot of them can be transmitted from goats to sheep and vice versa.
Wow.
Some of this can be transmitted from cows as well.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, make sure that your animals are coming from a source where they're tested. If you talk to a goat breeder, you don't have to remember all this fancy medical stuff. But if you talk to a goat breeder, you say, do you do yearly testing or do you test your goats? And they say, testing for what? What are you talking about?
Run away.
Run away. Run away. Yeah. I would be less concerned about vaccines. Everyone's worried about vaccines. Do you vaccinate? I don't want to vaccinate. Don't worry about your vaccines. You can always vaccinate an animal even if it's unvaxxed. Don't worry about that. If you don't want your animal vaccinated, talk to your breeder and say, hey, could you just not vaccinate my animal for me? Mm-hmm. I've started saying, I'll vaccinate if you want. If you ask not to, then I won't. But if you do want them vaccinated, you come and pick them up. And while you're there picking them up, I'm going to vaccinate them in front of you so you can see where it's done, that it's been done. And then I hand you the information.
Oh, very good.
And that's
very
what I do. Good. I do it right there in front of them so they can see the site. They see exactly where it was done. They witness it. There's no say, you said hi, I said, she said, I misunderstood. No, they see it. They can even change their mind up until the second. So that's the way I do it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Make sure they don't have snotty noses. It's like a little kid who's got a cold. That's the way they look. If they're coughing, if they get droopy ears, if they've got poopy butts, hey, this isn't right for me. Walk away. Again, just walk away.
I get that a lot with people that ask me if a particular tree looks like it's healthy or not.
Yeah.
And I bet. You just stand back and look, and does it look healthy? Does it look vibrant? Does it look happy? And you can do that with animals too, it sounds like.
Yeah. Absolutely, you can. The other thing I didn't put on my sheet here is temperament. If you go there to visit their farm and that farmer, that rancher walks up to the fence and all the animals run away, walk away. Uh-oh. Because that animal is not going to be any better for you. That animal is going to take off on you too. So
interesting. Interesting you would say that, because when Heidi and I met 12 years ago, I had chickens at my house in Phoenix, and they weren't lap chickens. They would pretty much run away from us. And Heidi raised a dozen hens, and she held them every day, and they would come up and jump in her lap and climb up her back. And so that has a lot to do with how they're raised from chick.
It does. And there's plenty of animals that are considered completely friendly. Like, you don't want an animal, again, jumping on your head, or a goat feeling so comfortable with your personal space that they're going to grow full grown and then they're going to be knocking you down looking for animal crackers. Nobody needs that either. So when I say friendly, they'll come up to the gate and they'll look at you. And if you try and touch them, they might back off. That's completely normal. And that's a completely acceptable and fine. Mm-hmm. Like, animals can be friendly without being snuggly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a line there. Okay.
Heidi likes to snuggle with them.
Yeah, I do. I've got a snuggle sheep. I got 5 snuggle goats. And so, yeah, I'm very partial to it. Chickens, not so much. So the other thing is age. Don't bring home really old animals, and don't bring home animals that are being home too early. So same way, it's not a good idea to get a puppy from the shelter who's only 4 weeks old when they're supposed to be weaned at 8 weeks. Don't go bringing home a 4-week-old goat. That's not from a breeder. And there's like bottle babies. Like, sometimes, like, I have goats and I sell bottle babies sometimes because maybe mom isn't making enough milk, or I want to be milking the mom. There's a lot of people who do want bottle babies, but I do my testing in my herd. And so I can say, yes, it's a bottle baby. And by the way, when I sell that baby goat to you, that goat has already had colostrum from mom. Comes from a closed flock. I can give you the pedigree of that animal, has already been dehorned, has already been seen by the vet. Wow. And that animal also has already been trained to a bottle. And by the way, when you come and pick him up, I'm going to hand you a whole gallon of milk from his mom and two bottles with the nipples in them that he was trained to, along with his pedigree papers. So that baby has got a good jump start, and that is a firm foundation for you. And that's what you want to look for in a breeder. Make sense? Okay. Containment and housing. This is what you talked about, Greg.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that your fences are going to not just contain your animals, but keep bitey things from the woods out.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that those animals are going to be safe from other things. Coyotes, everything loves chicken. We know that. Everything will eat a chicken. But goats and sheep too.
Yeah. And interesting, I started keeping chickens at the urban farm in Phoenix in 1999. Mm-hmm. We were right in the middle of Phoenix. If you stood on my roof and looked 100 miles in each direction, there was city kind of thing.
Wow.
And it took until 2014 to have an animal incident in my house. And we actually, so I kept chickens from 1999 to 2014, and we woke up one morning and 10 of our hens were dead. Now, remember, I said right in the middle of Phoenix, bobcats, the kill pattern. We discovered that the kill pattern on 10 hens was that this is how bobcats work. They're cats. They play with their prey. And so they hauled one off and killed 9 of them. So we proceeded to build a predator-proof coop. And remember, we were right in the middle of Phoenix. It's like, how does a bobcat get in? And interestingly enough, in my neighborhood over the past 10 years, I saw raccoons, javelinas, foxes, coyotes, bobcats. And with the exception of javelinas, all of them will, and then the flying birds mm-hmm. will take out hens. So you need to make sure that you're building a safe space for them to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said. Everything loves chicken, aerial, ground, nocturnal, diurnal, doesn't matter. And by the way, there are coyotes everywhere, I think, except Hawaii. There's coyotes everywhere, and they have absolutely 100% adapted to urban environments very well. So just consider it like wherever you are, you've got coyotes.
Yeah.
So plan accordingly. Yeah. So containment for goats needs to be climb proof and something that they can't jump over very easily. I would also recommend that any structure, because goats do love to climb on things, and especially when they're young. So if you put up one of those big old wooden wire spools and it's right up against the fence, they are going to use that as a little launch pad, and they're going to jump right. They're going to bounce right on out.
Yeah.
And the little ones, Nigerian dwarfs, cute as a button. Those are parkour masters, I tell you. Those guys can run up, they can bounce off a wall and then zip over a fence. So think like a parkour kid. Think like a kung fu springboard master little goat who will try 20 times. And as soon as they get over the fence once, it's a self-rewarding behavior. They will continue to do it. So make sure that you keep them contained.
So we're protecting them from getting out. And this is the same with hens. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I suggest people do is they trim one hen's wing. And the way I used to do it in Phoenix is you grab them by the back, you turn them over, and they'll flail their wings out. And there's a line, you can see it. It's just like cutting nails. You just cut one side. And that makes it much harder for them to fly, because if you leave them fully winged, they can fly up over fences.
Yeah, a chicken fully winged can fly a good 4 or 5 feet in the air easily.
Yeah.
And little light breeds like a Lackenwelder, by the way, which are great little birds, they can actually take off and they can bank and they can turn.
Wow.
Yeah, there are some birds, the smaller and lighter ones, the egg laying breeds especially, are lighter bodied and they can fly better. Like they get the dual purpose layers, the heavy ones, like the Bielefelders that I have, like I mentioned. When they're young, they'll flutter over more, but after they get mature and more heavy bodied, they'll settle in and they'll kind of keep their feet. I see something here talking about livestock guardian dogs. Livestock guardian dogs are amazing. Remember that they are not for everyone. A lot of people report that their livestock guardian dogs bark a lot all night long as they're doing their job, which is fine in some places and not fine in others.
Yeah.
And also I do know that they can take up to a year to learn how to be fully safe and trained and reliable. There's some that are just born that way, and that's great, but it can take a year or more of training until they are rock solid reliable. So keep that in mind. The other thing is llamas. I can tell you that I have a guardian llama that has been used for my goats and my sheep, and she is outstanding. She's great.
Hold on. Mm-hmm. Guardian llama.
Yes, a guardian llama. Now, llamas are not going to be able to take on mountain lions or
bears.
No, definitely not. However, they are a great visual deterrent. Remember, nothing's going to make your animals predator proof. You're trying to make your animals a harder target than their natural food. Mm-hmm. Okay. So predators don't want to get injured. They want an easy meal without getting an injury. Mm-hmm. So a large animal that stops and stares at something, there is, I can't remember the name of it, but there is there's a biological effect where a non-native animal in the presence, a large non-native animal throws them off a little bit. I can't remember what it's called. I see a comment here that says that they've had a llama they've never had success with. It's very true. Llamas are not natural guardians of their flocks so much. Mm-hmm. Not all llamas are suited to be guardians. Right. Very generally, llamas will be good guardians and not very friendly to their humans, or they will be human-oriented and friendly to them and ignore their flock. Uh-huh. So it can be a little bit of a hit or miss, but I can tell you that I really recommend people do not go with donkeys or mini donkeys. They are very popular, but I would say about one donkey in 10 will stomp young arrival animals to death when they're born. They're probably fine with adults, but they'll stomp lambs and kids to death. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, and I have known several people who that has happened to. So that's a thing.
Okay. Mary mentioned the Great Pyrenees. That's a big thing for people to have here in Asheville.
Yeah.
And they're not great. A small dog.
They're huge.
I would guess 150 pounds, the males. Oh,
yeah, easily. Yeah, my daughter's a groomer. She talks about Great Pyrenees all the time. She says generally they're not human friendly, but they're amazing with their families and their flocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about containment. Yeah. Fencing, just make sure that it's strong and tight and intact and you don't have broken wires and barbed wire hanging off the top and loose fences and loose wires and rotted off posts and stuff like that with nails sticking out where animals get their eyeballs stuck and their skin gets pulled. So take a gander around your paddock or your pasture every once in a while and think like a horse. Clumsy and prone to accidents. And if you got a nail sticking out and a fence staple loose and something's flapping, get rid of that. And I'm not a fan on modifying animals for our purposes, docking tails and clipping ears or anything like that. But I am a really big fan of dehorning goats because they will hurt each other. They will hurt you and they will get stuck in fences. They mm-hmm. know when they have horns, they know how to use them. You can't dehorn an animal that is an adult very effectively, who already has them. But if you have the shot to get one when they're younger, I really highly recommend it. I really do.
Got it. Cool. Okay. Good to know. We really haven't talked about housing.
Mm-hmm.
Like a barn?
Yeah. So let's talk about a barn. Very generally, all animals need to be dry and not in direct drafts.
Mm-hmm.
So they can handle cold. They can handle most heat. Your animals find ways to handle heat, but they do not do well in direct airflow in cold weather. So something that is going to be ventilated, but not gushing cold.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Ohio, in my barn, I have an area cut out of the side of my barn where my goats can walk in and out of their little, it's like a lounge. It's three horse stalls all opened up to each other. And it's got a picnic table on the inside and a couple other tables. And
hold on, a picnic table for the goats or for you?
Yeah, for the goats. They jump up on the picnic table. They bounce up on it. They lay on it in the different layers. They love it. They shove each other off and play mean goat games. Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, what I do to keep the cold air from gushing in on them is in the wintertime, I install this vertical. You ever go to a big box store and walk into a refrigerated section? They have those vertical clear plastic strips. You part it like a curtain. You can get that stuff on Amazon cheap. And then you just nail that or attach that to a board that then you then attach, you remove or place in place. And it acts like a nice little buffer. And they very quickly learn how to come in and out. And there's your little goat door. Right. Keeps the cold air from gushing in.
Nice. All right. Yep. Cool.
It's very easy. Yeah. Things like that. There's a lot of really easy hacks for that. You want to make sure that if it's a three-sided shelter, that's fine for most animals. You want to make sure that it has its backside to the wintertime prevailing winds. So here in Ohio, our winds come from the west. And so my three-sided structures have their butts to the west. And if we're going to be getting a storm that's coming in to the east from the east or the north or the south, I will sometimes pile up bales of straw or a big hay bale in order to give them a little bit more of a wind buffer during that really difficult time.
You're thinking zones mm-hmm. like a permaculturist.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Nice.
So you need to know, and you also need to make sure that they have shade so that they can get out of the hot sun when it's very hot. You need to make sure that they can get out of the rain. So they need to have the ability to get out of weather events. And again, this is minimizing stress. You want to make sure that they can get away from things that are scary outside, minimizing stress. You want to make sure that they can stay warm or cool, minimizing stress.
Yep.
Right. If they can get into a darker barn that maybe has a fan running in the summertime, there's a lot less flies, minimizing stress. So in these comfortable places where these animals are is going to minimize your stress. It's going to make them much more comfortable. Of course, you want clean bedding in there. And if you are adding them to an existing flock or herd, or whatever it is, a flurd, if you're adding them to your existing flurd, then one of the things you can do is give them a little area that is theirs where they can see and smell and meet their new roommates, their new flurd mates, but they cannot be injured by them. So they have company, but they're not going to get beaten up because they're the new kid or the young kid.
Yeah. What I used to do with chickens is we'd keep them separate in two. We had a coop where we designed it. So we had two separate areas of the coop so that when we brought in new chickens, they would get used to seeing each other through hardware cloth.
Yeah. Chickens are vicious. They're the worst.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Cows, you can pretty much put them in with each other. Goats, they're gonna fight it out. Sheep are like, okay, we're cool. Chickens, they're gonna eat each other. You have to really introduce them slowly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, now food and water.
Yeah, food and water. So food and water is a big thing. Animals are really funny about what their water tastes like. So they might not like the new water sometimes. Goats especially are picky. Chickens, I don't think they care so much. But goats can be picky about that. They have the ability to smell as keenly as a deer, and they get offended by things that smell different or smell weird. So when you have an animal that you've just brought in who's not drinking, you might be able to stir in a little bit of molasses with the water to tempt them to drink. It has iron in it, got a little bit of shot of sugar in it, and it can give them a little bit of an energy boost if they're particularly stressed.
Perfect.
Yeah. So you can get them to drink the water that way sometimes, just a little bit. Food, when you get a new animal, make sure that the person you are getting your animal from is willing to and able to give you some portion of food to go with your new arrival. Mm. So that animal does not have an intestinal door slam of a change. That animal has the ability to digestively acclimatize to the new feed that you are going to be feeding that animal, and they can ration it in and taper it in.
One big thing is that you are what your animals eat.
100%.
So make sure that you're feeding them a good, healthy, we always go with organic for our chickens.
It's really important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially homesteaders here, folks. These are usually not animals that are just for pets. These are animals that feed us. These are animals that we want to have healthy babies. These are animals that we get milk from, or we might even be harvesting them and processing them and eating them ourselves. Yeah. And so one of the things I always tell people is feed them right, take care of them, treat them like you're treating your family, because ultimately that's what you're doing. So when you're paying attention to that animal and you are cleaning out their pan, you're making sure that their water is clean, you're making sure that their bedding is changed out, that their home is dry, that their water isn't scurfy, you don't have 3 inches of algae and dead bugs floating in it, that there's no manure pooled around. When you take care of that animal, you're taking care of your family too, because that shows, that impacts the overall health of that animal, and it all comes through. Like Greg said, you are what you eat. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So food and water. Yeah, I would really recommend you do not feed your goat straight sweet feed. They're going to love it. They're going to dive into it like crack, and chances are that they're going to end up with acid indigestion. If your goats start having a manure that looks like dog poop piles, they might be a little bit too, might be too sweet for them. They get some rumen acidosis as ruminants. They ferment their food and then they burp it up and they chew it and then they put it into another chamber of their stomach. So they're not like you and me. It's not like once in and through. It's like lots of back and forth and a lot of sugar. The same way we shouldn't be eating a lot of sugar, they really shouldn't be eating a lot of sugar. It causes overgrowth and it can give them some pretty bad acid indigestion. So one of the things you want to do with goats is you want to make sure that they always have baking soda available. Yes, Arm & Hammer baking soda. You just pour it in a little dish, you put it out for them and they will eat it free choice. You'd be amazed.
Really?
Yeah, but I also recommend that you mix in with your, if you have a sweet feed, like a, like I have a sweet feed that's a dairy goat ration, but I mix it 50-50 with rolled barley, and then I cut that another 50%. So it's more like 25% ration of the sweet feed, and it's 75% rolled barley. So
What is sweet feed?
It's a feed that is usually like a milled pellet, and then like some cracked corn or some wheat or some other grains, and then it has a vitamin supplement put into it. And then it is all sprayed with a little bit of molasses to keep it from getting too dusty and blowing away or settling out. And so it clumps together. It doesn't like stick together, but just enough molasses in it to stop things from settling out and getting too dusty. Yeah. So it's called a sweet feed because sheep and goats both love molasses. And they just will eat it and eat it. So there's a lot of different things you can get. Sometimes dairy goats are a little funny. Just talk to the breeder that you get them from and try and find out what they fed. Everyone has different things. They might feed alfalfa pellets. They might feed rolled barley. They might feed rolled oats, a mixed feed, a pelleted feed, sunflower seeds. You need your mineral salts and your other supplements that you're going to have your animals with too. So definitely go ahead and research that. So yeah, food and water is not just food and water. It's also gonna be all the supplements and minerals too.
Deborah has a question. She says, what can you grow to feed chickens?
What can you grow to feed chickens? Everything that comes out of your garden, like all your lettuce butts and potato peels and almost anything that you have in your veggies. I don't really grow too much just for my chickens, but they eat a lot out of my kitchen. So they eat what I don't. You're not going to feed them leftover Chinese food, obviously, but leftover mashed potatoes, it's completely fine. And when my goat steps in a bucket of milk and she puts her foot in a bucket of milk, and I'm not going to dump that. I'm going to take the chicken food and I'm going to pour it in there. And then my chickens all get a milk and feed slushy that day.
Oh,
so nothing goes to waste. Nothing goes to waste.
Oh, absolutely.
Mary says, yes. Look up Harvey Ussery. Harvey Ussery is a tremendous resource. He's like the chicken whisperer. He's brought breeds back from extinction. He's an amazing resource. He will talk about land races and Icelandic chickens that can forage for themselves. And a lot of people do rotational grazing where they have their chickens going around behind their cows to eat fly larvae and things like that. But if they're free ranging around and you're moving them constantly, chickens will offset about 15% of their feed bill through foraging, 15 to 20% if they're really good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then the adjustment process itself is the last one. I would recommend quarantining any new animals that come in, whether they're birds or they're four-leggeds. I really recommend quarantining them. And it serves a dual purpose. First of all, you get to know that animal, you know what's normal for them. Second, you get to see if there's any changes while they're there. Third, should they have contracted something on their way, or they got sick, or they were just getting sick right before you brought them in? This is especially true for chickens.
Yep.
You need time for those symptoms, the incubation period, literally, to elapse. You need that time for that pathogen to display the symptoms that are going to show the illness. Quarantine is an absolute must. Supplements for sheep and goats. It's very easy to get like a salt block. I recommend that you do loose minerals instead, because animals tend to wear down their teeth by just like gnawing on a block. Give them the loose mineral. They'll take it more. And the other thing is, a lot of places, especially with our soils being so depleted anymore, a lot of places have feeds that we are able to get are supplemented with selenium, or the grasses are selenium poor, or things like that. Mm-hmm. So if you purchase a mineral salt that has selenium in it, so Redmond, REDMOND, mm-hmm. is a good, yeah. Let me type this in here. Redmond salts with selenium. That's a good thing to get for your sheep and goats. And the other thing is the hay you feed them. Talk to the farmer and find out if he sprays his fields.
This is huge.
It is huge because then their manure goes into your garden. Yeah, and if they have been eating grass that came from a farm where he sprayed, Grazon is from hell. Have you heard of Grazon?
I haven't.
It's a Dow chemical product called Graze, G-R-A-Z-E-O-N. Mm-hmm. It has a half-life of a year. And so it actually accumulates and it takes years to go away. And so if you are feeding your animals hay that came off of a field where they've been using Grazon for 4 years, mm-hmm. and then it passes right through them, it will stop things from growing in your garden because even composting doesn't get rid of it. I know people who have had this happen to them.
Well, yeah, exactly. And if you're getting horse manure, I answer this question a fair amount on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Horse and cow manure, what are they getting fed? Because if they're getting fed grasses that have been sprayed, it's going mm-hmm. right through them and going into your garden. And there's a couple of them that if you use horse manure within it, you forget it. You might as well throw your garden out and start over again.
Yeah. Some of this stuff really takes years to get it out of your soil. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. I got a load of cow manure the first year that I moved in. I got a load of cow manure from a local cow farmer. Mm-hmm. He was a conventional farmer. He dewormed heavily, whether they needed it or not. Mm-hmm. They were kept in a lot. And he said, hey, I got some extra manure. And I'm like, sure, bring it on over. It was dead poo. It was dead poo.
Yep.
I put that out in a portion of my front field. And the chickens walked around. I'm like, there you go, girls, go get it. And they're like, they walked away. Hey, don't you want to scratch through this? They're like, no, it's dead. It was dead.
Yeah.
It was dead. So really pay attention to that.
Thank you so much for this. You have a podcast. Why don't you tell us about your podcast and how people can find it?
Yeah, my podcast is called Fair Hill Farmstead Life, and I do a couple episodes myself, and a lot of times I interview other people who are into regenerative farming, organic farming, small-scale farming, and adjacent areas. So Greg was on my podcast at one point talking about urban farming. He's obviously
we've
in
traded.
We traded a couple months ago. It was fun. Oh, I loved it. Yeah, and recently I had a guy on who is a city dweller in Nashville, and he does edible landscaping.
Oh, like food forest. Nice.
Oh, I know. Jeremy Lekich. Yeah, from Nashville Foodscapes. Yeah. I had Jesse Frost, the no-till gardener from No-Till Growers on. He has done hundreds of YouTube videos. Oh my God, he's hilarious. If you watch his YouTube videos, and he does all no-till gardening stuff. He's really good with some of his methods. So it's a fun podcast, and I try to bring people on who are all over the industry and do all kinds of different things. And then I also do public speaking engagements. And I am going to be speaking at the Eastern Tennessee Homesteaders Alliance in July. And I am going to be in Vegas this coming week talking at the REAP Platform Parallel Economy Convention. I'll be attending the Rogue Food Conference, not as a speaker, but just attending in May, which if any of you are small producers is pretty cool. It's about $225 for a ticket, but it's on Polyface Farms, and it is people from all over the country get together and find out ways to circumvent stupid food laws together. So there's a lot of things going on out there. Yeah. And I try to be involved with a lot of them. And then on my farm itself, of course, we do very parasite resistant hair sheep, and we do dairy goats. And I have 200 different varieties of daylilies from 6 inches tall to 60 inches tall. Some very different daylilies that are wonderful. They're my guilty pleasure. And the deer mostly leave them alone, so I don't have the issues that Greg faces. And then I have a garden and orchard, and I'm starting to plant out a food forest. So this is what I do. This is the stuff I do on the farm. And to pay the bills, I do consulting for other people who want to get a little help planning their own thing, or getting some fresh ideas, or get a tune-up, or get a jump start. Because farming's hard enough. And it's even harder if you don't have generational knowledge to draw upon, and you don't have a mentor, and you don't have friends. So I help people put together multi-year plans for their homestead, their little farm, a small business. I'm working with a group in Southeast United States, helping to build an agrihood and designing the organic farm in the middle of it, things like that. I've even been contacted by people who want to get a resilient homestead for a bug out shelter. So judgment-free zone. I don't care. I'm not judging. I just want to help you be earth friendly and produce lots of food for yourself and your family and anyone you want to share it with. And that's what I do.
Lots of healthy food.
Yes. Nutrient dense food.
Yeah.
Nature's exactly. Kitchen. Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, Judith. This will go on our podcast in about 30 days. The people here got to hear it live and ask questions, and now we'll have several thousand people listen to it next month.
Very cool.
On the podcast. So thank you for that. What's your website again?
www.fairhillfarm.com.
And your podcast.
My podcast is Fair Hill Farmstead Life. In my farm shop, you'll also see some goat's milk shampoo bars and raw goat's milk soaps that I make here on the farm.
Isn't your son doing that?
Yeah, he's getting into it.
Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Donna from Mesa says, thank you, Greg and Judith. Really great webinar. Absolutely.
Oh, very good.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Judith.
So, look at that, little hands and hearts going up. Yeah. Anyone who's interested in getting into sheep, I do have a free 90-minute class on my website that you can and click on and watch. It's a deeper dive into a lot of this stuff. But if you're interested, it talks about parasite management and things like that.
Cool. Excellente. Okay. All right. Thank you for your time. Thank you, everybody, for attending.
Take care. Thanks. Nice seeing everybody. Bye-bye.
Do you want to learn more about sheep? Join Judith for her sheep class at fairhillfarm.com/post/sheep class.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org, or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.
Hey, Urban Farm Podcast listeners. If you're as passionate about preserving the bounty of each season as we are, hey, I canned my first peaches at the age of 18, and that was a long time ago. Then you're going to love what our friends over at Denali Canning have in store for you. They're on a mission to spread the love and knowledge of food preservation, and they're inviting you to join the journey for free. Right now, Denali Canning is offering free canning lids to anyone who wants to dive deeper into the world of food preservation. Yes, you heard that right, absolutely free. It's the perfect opportunity for both seasoned canners and those curious about starting. Denali is about quality, reliability, and supporting the canning community, ensuring that you get the best results every time you preserve. So why not give it a try? Visit denalicanning.com/free to claim your free lids and start your preserving adventures today. That's denalicanning.com/free.